everyone, we can get started. I'd like to call to order our May 8th meeting of the Health, Human Services, and Human Rights Committee. I'm going to begin by asking for a motion to approve the April 3rd meeting minutes. Moved by Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Harmon. Any discussion on the minutes from April? No? Okie dokie. All those in favor of approving the May 3rd minutes? April 3rd minutes amendment? Great. Any opposed? Cool. So before we get started with the resolutions, we've invited Family Services, which has done a lot of work with the county over the years, to give us a quick presentation over around the work that they do. And I'm going to step aside and let them on the show. So you're welcome to come up here and introduce yourselves. And if you have, like, ideally, like 5 minutes, and then 5 minutes for questions will be perfect.
Jesse's going to hand some stuff out.
I'll get started.
We respect the time limit, so we really appreciate your time this evening. Thank you so much. I'm Leah Feldman. I'm the CEO for Family Services, and I'm here with Jesse Cerubi, our Chief Program Officer, and Trish Prunty, our Vice President for Philanthropy. So Family Services has a rich history of providing services across the Hudson Valley. We are often mistaken for Family of Woodstock. We are totally separate organizations, we have 14 sites across Ulster, Dutchess, and Orange counties, and a 145-year history of providing support across the Hudson Valley. Here in Ulster County, we have 2 sites in Kingston, one in Ellenville and one in Highland. At Family Services, we like to say that we exist to support everyone's right to thrive. The work we do is really not just about meeting basic needs, but supporting people's fundamental rights. And we do that through 7 different program areas. And I am going to briefly review all that we do and then take some time to dive deeply into what we do in Ulster County. But I'd just love to paint a full picture of all the services we provide. Last year, we provided support to nearly 19,000 children, adults, and families across the Hudson Valley. So these are some of our program areas. In the city of Poughkeepsie, we run the SNUG program. You may have heard of SNUG. It's a statewide gun violence prevention model. We use a credible messenger street outreach model to reduce gun violence in the city of Poughkeepsie. We also operate 24-hour, 7-day-a-week services for victims of crime. We are well known across the state for our innovation in services to crime victims. We do a lot of work in the domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse spheres, and we do a lot of work coordinating communities and systems and policies in addressing domestic violence and sexual assault. We support the right to opportunity and growth for young people through our teen programming. We operate Teen Center that focuses on social emotional development and providing a safe space for teens to belong. And this is our Family Partnership Center. At the bottom here, we own a big old school building where we are the landlord to 20 other organizations, nonprofit and other entities that are housed with us in our building to provide a beacon of support, a beacon of hope and access for the community. These are the organizations that are housed in our Family Partnership Center site. We provide family support programs where we strengthen families throughout the community, and very exciting in Ulster County coming soon, we will be opening a child care center at the Ulster County Family Court. We provide this service in Dutchess and Orange counties, and we received a grant from the state this past year to open our child care center in the family court. So that will provide free child care for families who are utilizing the court. And you may know that we, since 2007, have run the Ulster Prevention Council, where we, for the first time this year, are partnered with all 9 school districts doing evidence-based substance use prevention, and also coordinating the Ulster Prevention Council and board, the multidisciplinary group of community agencies that are coming together around substance use prevention. So I'm going to pass it over to Jessie. She's going to talk a little bit about our mental health services, including some exciting expansions we have going on.
Good. And I'm going to stand here because I don't want my back to read it in my chair. So again, I'm Jessie Streben, Chief Program Officer with Family Services. I'm going to give the briefest overview of our behavioral health program or our mental health services. We have New York State Office of Mental Health licensed mental health programs or behavioral health centers in Ulster County and in Dutchess County. We are longtime partners with Ulster County and actually contracted partners with the Ulster County Department of Mental Health, as well as other programs, of course. And we historically serve in three Ulster County behavioral health centers in Highlands, Park Lane, in Kingston, here on Golden Hill, in Golden Hill, and then in Ellenville, the village of Ellenville, and the Trudy Garber building. Adults 18 and plus through all of those centers. And we are offering individual therapy, group therapy, other supportive groups, peer-led supportive groups, and psychiatric services and medication services in all of those centers. And we are very excited to very soon this summer, be expanding our services and opening them up to children and their families age 3+ in our Ulster County centers and also in a couple of centers in Dutchess County as well. And that will include the same services. So we have individual therapy, the group therapy, supportive services, and psychiatric and medication management services for children and, of course, for the whole family system as well. And that is one of our biggest news in our very near future. We're hoping for July. So keep your eyes open. We'll definitely be doing a good amount of promotion on that and spreading the word with the schools and with our other partners. But we have a number of other new initiatives as well that I will give a brief preview of. We kicked off recently something called same-day access or same or open access, you might hear it called as well. Now, what that means is that when somebody is looking to have a new appointment or engage in care for the first time with us, they are able to walk in when they are ready for care according to a schedule in each of our centers. They walk in for that first appointment instead of needing to call and schedule an appointment often days, weeks, or sometimes even months out in the future. So the idea is we get people into care when they need their care at the time that they're looking for it. Otherwise, we often lose them and they're lost in the system. This has been working really well for us. We kicked it off in March. We're really excited about it. We've seen a 20% plus increase in access over the same period of time last year. So this is a really good move on our part. And we will be having that same process for our children and families who are coming in our doors, later this year as well. We also have initiated MAT or OUD, which means medication-assisted treatment for people with opioid use disorder. So that would be medications like buprenorphine, orally or via injection, and that's evidence-based, very effective treatment to help people actually recover from their substance use disorder. We are also kicking off case management. We do not have case management services in-house. We have been longtime partners with Mental Health Association, and we're able to provide case management to our clients through them, but we will be bringing those services in-house and expanding what we're able to offer to our clients. So we're working on the behavioral health, medical needs, but also, of course, the social determinant of health as well. And then we have a number of additional partnerships. I mentioned that we have peer support groups. That is a partnership with People USA. We're very excited to have that in Ulster County. And we are also going to be in People USA's new stabilization center. I remember a few months ago, they actually did a presentation in this room. And we will be doing clinical care along with them in their stabilization center in the new healthy, across the way from the Healthy Village. It's the Ulster County Wellness Center. Center for Wellness. Thank you very much. We also have a forming relationship with Institute for Family Health, where we can streamline our referrals back and forth from each other. We can receive their primary care clients who have dual diagnosis, behavioral health and mental health conditions in our doors and treat them. And we can also help our clients at the primary care and the preventive care that they need. So that's a new, very good relationship and a great way of really increasing the quality of care that we can provide for the community. We have in our near future also, we are planning something called intensive outpatient services. More to come on that one, but that would be like a next up level of care from the outpatient care that we currently provide. Currently we see people, it could be weekly, it might be every other week for individual therapy. With an intensive outpatient level of service, we can see people multiple times a week when they are in a crisis, for instance, or when they are needing more intensive care, and we don't have the typical barriers with insurance, for instance, to be able to do that. So we are really looking forward to a number of enhancements throughout Ulster County and partnering with all of you as we go about all of that. And again, more to come on it. But we are, just so you know, I mean, not Ulster County, but in Rhinebeck, we are also expanding. We are moving a Rhinebeck office and making, I think, like double in size in Rhinebeck. We'll also be bringing children's services there. It's just across the river, not Ulster County. But if you know people who work, study, play, worship, also live in Dutchess County, we're there for them as well. And we have 5 behavioral health centers in Dutchess County. And, you know, we'll explore, satellites and other opportunities throughout Ulster County as well. So I know I spoke really fast and said a lot of things. So we'd love to hear questions about mental health after we play a quick video, I believe.
So, I pushed the wrong button. Oh, there we go. So, thank you for having us here. You know, Family Services, we are an agency that's on the move. We are very eager to expand and enhance our impact in the communities we serve. We have a solid reputation both for service provision, but also for leveraging millions of dollars of state and federal funding into the communities that we serve. And so please keep us in mind. We are eager to continue our impact. And, something that we've done over the past year, we're all facing some uncertainties and challenging times right now. And we've really positioned ourselves to being a beacon of hope throughout the counties that we serve and throughout the Hudson Valley region. You may have seen our messages of kindness up on the 3 major bridges that unite the Hudson Valley or on the walkway over the Hudson. We're just trying to spread some light and kindness, remind us that we're all humans and that all of our mental health matters. And by taking care of one another is really how we ensure that we have a thriving region. So I'm going to leave you with our PSA that we have created about kindness, and then we'll take a few questions. But
Thank you for the opportunity to let you know a little bit about what we do and the CMLs is working, but we're happy to answer any questions.
Great. Does anyone have any questions? All right.
Sure.
Yeah, seems so. Thank you so much. We really, really appreciate you being here. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah.
And take care. Thank you very much.
Yeah, of course. I think you just need to, you might just pass that up here. Jeff, can you grab that from her? No, to your left. The quick question. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much. Cool. Excellent. All right, so let's go into resolutions. Resolution number 226. Everything good?
Yep. Okay.
Resolution number 226, authorizing a waiver from policy requiring nonprofit vendors to comply with applicable reporting and tax filing. This is coming through Department of Social Services. I believe this is in relation to legislation that we passed regarding that. Yep. So why don't we hear from Commissioner Iaposi first, and then we'll have a discussion about it. Everyone, this is James. James is our new deputy executive, replaced Joanna, and he's going to be joining this committee, so we're all very happy to have him. And hopefully he'll be happy to have us as well. We might get on his nerves.
Yeah,
we'll see how it goes. You've got big shoes to fill, but I'm sure you're going to do a great job. Deputy Executive Romenta, do you want to speak to this or Commissioner?
The original policy passed last year. At the time, we had a few nonprofit vendors who were noncompliant with their federal responsibilities. The goal of the resolution was to get them compliant, was to use the energy of the county to encourage compliance. That happened. Everyone who was noncompliant at the time of passage is now compliant. However, we've now found our first entity that fell out of compliance since. And so there's been turnover at Ulster County, and in that process, compliance was not upkept. And so we're trying to develop policy for how we're going to continue the reviews and how we're going to cure into compliance. We're going to propose, we're in discussions with the comptroller and with the legislator who sponsored the original resolution to develop a cure policy. But in the interim, we have this entity that's fallen out of compliance, and we're hoping that we can get a waiver to continue doing work with them while we get them back into compliance. They are expected to be back into compliance next month, but we would like to sign contracts immediately. Some of the services that they provide in particular are for individuals. The most prescient ones are those for individuals in emergency housing who are receiving food deliveries on a pretty much daily basis. And we'd like to ensure that they can continue to do that and that we can sign more contracts to provide that service.
Yep. Legislator Collins?
Just to clarify what compliance means, it means that they filed 990 or filed an extension of 990 in a timely manner. This particular agency has not done that. They're working on it to get it done sooner. I think a month is what the time frame is going to be. I feel like the policy we put in place last year is working. It's identifying what the issues are and making them resolve the issue. So I'm okay with the waiver. I think it's appropriate for a waiver for this situation as long as they're actively resolving.
Great. Yep. Legislator Lopez?
Do we already have a waiver policy in place, or are you asked
for us to?
So there's a proposed resolution that's going to come through with an extension ability at the executive level and then a waiver policy from us in the future. I don't think it was in the initial resolution.
The initial resolution doesn't include.
Does not have a waiver policy.
Right.
So how do we waive this if we don't have a waiver policy?
I think we just need to pass a resolution saying so. My understanding when we passed the resolution was that this would be exactly the situation, that it would mean that anytime someone fell out of compliance, they would have to come before the legislature and we would have to approve it.
Maybe could I follow up?
Sure.
So when you said there wasn't a waiver policy, there isn't a policy that explains like what a waiver would kind of conduct, but the original resolution includes language that says if someone falls out of compliance, we come to you to ask for a waiver. So that is in the original resolution, and it says that it's a 2/3 vote to achieve that.
Right. Yeah. My concern would be the precedent that it would set. We just passed resolution 78, and it's barely a month old, and we're already making an exception for the legislation that we passed. So, you know, what does this tell, you know, other vendors in the future, right? They fall out of compliance, is that they can just come back to us and be like, hey, you know, Resolution 78, you know, it didn't really hold a lot of water if it's barely a month later and we're already making exceptions for it.
So, any further comments?
I mean, I to some point, I agree with that, talk. You know, it is. I think that once you start enforcing it, though, people hearing it, are enforcing it, even to the point of, like, having their waiver. There are the risk of not receiving money from us, the final payment from us, or a contract from us. And we could vote no. You know, we need 2/3 in order to pass the waiver. So I think that gives them incentive to stay in compliance instead of risking the value, risking us not saying yes. The proposal to change or to modify the previous resolution extends it by a total, I think the executive can give it 2 months, and then beyond that, we can give it 2 more months with a waiver. But doesn't make it permanent. It's still got to be done. So I think I agree with you, right? They knew about this a year ago,
mm-hmm.
You know, and they didn't come in compliance. Sometimes shit happens. Yeah.
And what if it comes back, yeah, after the audits are performed, that there was some sort of, you know, financial mismanagement, and we're contracting, you know, with a vendor that now that has that had a questionable audit, you know, with
this isn't an audit; it's a 990 that they didn't file.
Okay, that's what's that? Federal?
It's a state reporting requirement for nonprofits. Yeah, do you want to?
It's essentially nonprofit tax return.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, so basically they didn't file their tax return. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So this feels to me like, you know, so if I remember correctly, part of the point of 78 was to create an early warning system so that we can get ahead of the situations that you're describing, right? So, like, it feels to me like this is kind of evidence that it worked. We've got an early warning. So now we can address it.
Legislator Collins?
Yeah, I think where we were when this 78 was passed is we had some very significant nonprofits 2 years behind. Now they're caught up. So it did make a difference for a lot of nonprofits. You know, look, none of us can file a late tax, right? And nonprofits need to be able to do that. I don't want them to do that, but they have done that historically in the past. And hopefully this brings them closer and makes them more aware of their fiduciary, you know, responsibilities to do those taxes. I mean, even with this, there's still a big gap, right? They don't have to file a 990 until at the very latest, with an extension, I think September of the year after. So the 2024 is that we file September 2025, maybe October. Which one is, I think, might be October. It depends on their financial year. So even then, you know, we don't know what's happening for 10 months in a nonprofit. So we do, there's always this gap in it that exists. But at least, you know, we can talk about it and we can see it, figure out why they're late and how they're going to correct it. So.
Yeah. This makes me a little bit uncomfortable, like to move forward with a contract where you're really unsure with what the results are going to be as a result of their late filing. Yeah. And I always look at, we're sitting on an unrestricted fund balance and we've got a ridiculous amount of money in there. Is it possible that we can create like a bridge in order, a funding bridge to cover whatever potential expenses, you know, maybe lost if we held off on this to see. You said what's the timeline going to be? About 2 months until you actually.
I would expect that they expect in their communications to be compliant at the end of next month.
Okay. Well, that's quick. So
just to be clear, so this policy stops signing a contract. It also stops the final payment within a contract. So this particular is a signing of the contract. Is that correct?
It's the signing of a new contract as well
current payments that we owe them.
Okay.
And so this would allow us to pay them for services that they've already rendered, as well as begin a new contract for future services.
Okay. Any other discussion? So I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 226.
I'll move to adopt.
By Legislator Harmon, second by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
That'll be a yes.
All right. So that was unanimous. Cool. All right. Resolution 227, approving execution of a contract for $112,000 entered into by the county with James McGinnis and Associates in the Department of Social Services. And Commissioner Iglesi or Deputy Commissioner Wood, do you want to?
So this is one of two. McGinnis is our program for preschool services. It's a country program. This particular one we've been using 20 plus years. It has two components. One is to pay the providers as well as seek reimbursement for the state electronic system. The other component is Medicaid component, where we bill Medicaid for those services that children are eligible for, and that's how we seek reimbursement for. And this is just their contract for 2024 through 2029, an extension of it. So it's not to exceed the 87, something they bill us monthly, and that's how we work on that one.
How is this different than the next software?
So the next software is a new component to this program. It's called eFax, which we had to purchase separately, and that contract's a little higher because we have to, in the first 3 years, cover the start, I call it the startup cost of it. The eFax, so all this documentation right now is done by paper. The school districts sign off on what they call a stack. It's basically acknowledging that these children are eligible for this number of services. We then data enter it into the McGinnis system, and then it gets uploaded into the state system, and then back and forth, and that's how I get it. This eSTAC will allow the districts to have access, and they can sign off all that paperwork, do it electronically. It comes into the McGinnis system. Then my staff will, you know, verify all the services they check off on, and then they're electronically, we no longer data enter, which hopefully will knock out a lot of errors we don't do on purpose, but just we have over last year we had over 1,500 stacks that we did, because we do a paper stack for every evaluation. Mm-hmm. We do paper stacks for the year-long services, but anytime there's an amendment, we have another piece of paper. They move school districts, another piece of paper. So if that's for our 700 and some children, it'll add up over time. So that's where that other resolution comes in, but it was submitted separately because it's a brand new one. We had it approved in this year's budget, and we had to contract for it with all the startups and everything, and then maintenance. And then in probably 3 years from now, it'll all be one package when we come back.
Any questions from the committee? Why don't we do this? We'll have the discussion about both of them right now. So if you have questions about either, ask them now, and then I'll ask for the motions to adopt them in succession, and we could just do it all together. Does anyone have any questions about the second one? I have lots of opinions about this, but that comes from my work in the private sector, so I'm not even going to ask those.
Okay. I would like to know what your questions are.
I don't know. I think it's incredible that these software companies are able to charge so much. I don't want to dig at that too much. I mean, do you know how they determine the amount that they charge you?
So there's different fees. It's a flat fee for the eSTAT. There'll be a flat fee for the eSTAT. It's a flat fee for paying providers, submitting all the reimbursement back and forth to the state. The Medicaid piece of it is a charge of 2% based on what they submit for us for claims for it. And we can, right now we're probably close to $500,000 that we could probably be eligible for that based on claiming. So if they get 10%, 2%.
And is that percentage included in this price?
It is an addition.
Ooh.
Not again, but
good work if you can get it, I guess.
It is 100% reimbursed.
I understand.
But there's still expenditures that the state and federal government are covering, obviously, without knowing the background.
Do they work with a lot of other counties?
They do throughout the state. This is one of the problems that I had initially years ago. They're probably one of the only ones that have created the system in order for the counties to be able to do this electronically. We spend our budget for preschool services is probably close to $12 million for it. It includes everything. They do everything for transportation, evaluations, all the services, our center-based programs, everything goes through this system at this point. The McGinnis program and Medicaid module, because we're always afraid the Medicaid is going to come down and audit us and we don't have all the paperwork. They have flags in their system electronically that will not let a claim come to us for approval if certain things are missing. Therefore, we still have to pay the provider that piece, but we just won't be able to get the extra Medicaid piece of it.
Do you use the software personally? Have you used it?
I have used the software personally. I've used it in the last 2 years.
Do you like it? Is it?
I do like it. It is user-friendly compared to the other programs that I use. The company is very responsive when we have questions, when things don't match up. But they're very responsive if the state system is horrendous, but it works with the state system for me. So if code is off by one number, and when I'm at, we'll call them. They're the ones that work with the state system to get that code together. I don't have to do that piece of it. Hopefully with this electronic stack program, a lot of those, we spent a lot of time with denials or rejections and trying to figure out between the school and us to figure out what the state wants. Again, this will help less of that from what I've heard from other counties.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, so I'll entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 227.
Motion.
That moved by Legislator Corcoran, seconded by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
And then I'll entertain any opposed? And then I'll entertain the resolution to adopt 228. Moved by Legislator McCullough.
Okay.
Seconded by Legislator Lopez. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Right. Great.
Resolution 229, confirming the appointment of Margaret M. Priel as the medical examiner of Ulster County. And Director Walter, do you want to give us
a feedback? Yeah, thanks. So this is exciting. We talked about this last month. Dr. Priel has been our forensic pathologist, but through Westchester Medical Center and contracts for decades and decades. We paid Westchester to have a forensic pathologist. Now we'll be able to have her on our salary, in our payroll, which is great. And it also serves a dual purpose of allowing us to have her serve as the chief medical examiner, making us an actual legit medical examiner's office where our medical examiner is also a forensic pathologist. And it also, instead of having two staff, it breaks it down to one.
Any questions? The next resolution's on this topic as well, so we'll talk about the finances in a moment. All right, well, if there's no other questions, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 229, moved by Legislator Collins, seconded by Legislator Harmon. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Right. Resolution 230, approving the execution of a contract amendment for rates anticipated to exceed $50,000 entered into by the county with Westchester County Healthcare Corporation, doing business as a Westchester Medical Center and Health Alliance Hospital, Mary's Avenue campus, through the Department of Health. And Director Walter, or I also had a, yeah, we can start with you. And then.
This is just the challenge of timing, because our current contract with them ends at the end of this month. You guys have to approve Dr. Priel. Then they have to get the executive has to fill. So we just needed a couple of months wiggle room. So we need to hold the current agreement we have with Westchester that includes Priel as a forensic pathologist for them just until we can switch her over here, assuming that she gets confirmed by you all, and then we will change the contract. It happened to end this very month. If it ended 2 months from now, we would not even need to be here.
And I had asked a question of Deputy Executive Amenta, which he answered, that helped explain about that there's really not ever intended to be any overlap, but this is just ensuring that they can
there's no gap. Right? So any questions or comments or concerns from the committee? Okay. So then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 230, moved by Legislator Collins, seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution 231, amending the 2025 Ulster County budget to accept an additional allocation of funds from the New York State Department of Health's Local Health Department Performance Incentive Program to promote physical activity to prevent chronic disease in the Department of Health. And Director Walter.
So this is also kind of fun. So we got money from New York State. The only parameters that were really given was it's chronic disease prevention and it needs to be centered in Kingston, this particular one. Other funding, that's not necessarily true. So what we're doing is we're working with Dennis Doyle and the Department of Planning, and we're going to be creating a walk-a-mile in a trail in Kingston where there's posts that kind of talk about how you take care of your chronic disease while people walk from one post to another to about a half mile, turn around to come back. So they kind of learn, but they do a little mile out and in. It promotes the department, but also promotes chronic disease prevention and promotes walking. And plus, some of this funding goes towards our Movement is Medicine campaign. You may have seen it. It's on many of the buses and the bus stops promoting Movement is Medicine.
Legislative Collins. What's the trail?
I wish I could remember the name. What's the trail that goes? It's in Kingston and it's Ulster County owned, not the Kingston.
Thank you.
We were the one to ask.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a good fit for it.
Yeah.
Cool. Any other questions? All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 231. Mm-hmm. Moved by Legislator Harmon, seconded by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 155, requiring high-quality field drug test kits for use in any required screening of participants of county-administered social service programs. And this is Legislator McCullough. Do you want to give us an update?
Well, can I make an amendment first to take out the word "feel" so that it covers tests in-house or feel?
Sure. So there is an amendment for a new resolve here as well.
Okay.
So do you want to, because it's been presented with that new resolve, which says, should any individual receive positive results on an initial drug test, administration of a secondary test of any brand shall be offered without delay to ensure that the false positive does not exist. So that was an amendment you want to make that amendment, and you also want to remove what do you want to?
That's the word "feel."
The word "feel."
It's brought up, and I forgot to make that change.
Okay, so that's on the title? That's
yes, the title.
Yes. That's the only where it appears.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
That was brought up at the last meeting. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so why don't you make a motion to amend the resolution to add the additional resolved as presented and remove "field" from the title. You could just say so moved.
So moved.
Okay. Do I have a second for that motion? Hold on one second. He can't second it.
No, I was seconding it.
Okay, so we've got a second, so that's a motion on the table. Commissioner Ibosi, do you want to comment?
I just wanted to comment that I think part of the conversation around using the word "field" was somewhat particular to the Department of Social Services. We as a department do not go out into the community and conduct field tests, but it is my understanding that some other departments who utilize the same test kit that we utilize, for instance, like probation, are out in the field. So you may want to leave that language in there if this is going to be resolution that's going to cover drug testing kits in terms of where they're administered by any county departments. If this is just going to continue to be particular to drug administered tests by social services, then taking the word "field" out would probably make sense. I just wanted to make that distinction because we're not the only department that administers drug tests.
Right. Well, it does say of county-administered social service programs.
Right.
So it's already kind of focused on that. And that's, is that the intention, right, is to only... Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
And I, my thinking, if I may, my thinking would be removing the word field would not narrow the definition. It would expand the definition.
Right. That's right.
Okay. And is that your understanding as well?
Yeah. For us, we just know that initially, when the resolution was arrived at, we're not out in the community at any location administering drug tests.
Okay. Yeah, legislator Collins.
Yeah, I prefer field to be in, and also obviously I'd like to cover other types of drug tests or probation also. But I don't necessarily need to do that today for this particular resolution. I do like the idea of having a backup test if a test goes on fails.
Generally.
Yeah.
Yep. Legislator Harmon?
I'd love to know why we would leave field in if we want to broaden.
Right.
Field if broader.
No, if you just say nothing is broader.
Right.
Okay, never mind.
Sorry, I don't mean
to. Right. House.
Right.
I think you know, I use the word all.
Yeah. All. Yeah. Well, all is implied by there being no modifier at all. Yeah.
So depending on how particular and specific we want to be.
It would be a very cynical read on this to imply that the exclusion of the word all would have some material impact.
Yeah. And I just have a question about the backup tests and how if it can cause a false positive, usually we get those results 2 weeks later. So I don't necessarily, we don't necessarily would call them in again unless, you know, we had a concern about
it. Yeah, there were circumstances that justified making arrangements for a subsequent test. We don't find out that there's a false positive immediately in real time.
Go ahead, Legislator Collins.
I mean, I guess the intention of this is that is the false positive, right? Like, because there's impact to the false positive.
Yeah.
There's a kind of remove the impact of a false positive or not have an impact of a false positive until they've failed another test. And again, it could be just say it could be 2 weeks later, and it could be a whole different.
So our policy, what we currently do is like if most of those tests come in because of the new allegations on a report, we need to verify if that's happening or not. And that's a long process. So we may get a positive. I say, no, I didn't do it. This is what I used. Or we'll send it away. We make note of it. It comes back as a false positive, and then we can see what we do 10, a panel of 10 drug tests, and we can see what came back as a negative that should have been a positive. About 6.7% of our tests come back as a false positive out of 289, almost 284 tests that we do in a 10-month period of time. I went back and looked. One of the things, most of the ones that we looked at came back, the false positive came back with K2 as being the one that ended up being negative K2, synthetic marijuana. It also reacts with some of the medications that people are taking for mental health issues or like something like seizures. So with those, it's we're talking to families or parents before ending anything to say, because a lot of them will say, oh, I have a prescription for X, Y, and Z. We didn't know that they had that until we talked to them about that. Most of the drug tests also that we take place at our agency are for visits that are taking place that day. If they come back positive, we don't end that visit unless that parent is so inebriated or intoxicated, not with us there, we will have that. But even if it's positive and we're sending it out for a test, we still have those visits. They're still supervised.
It has to be a significant impairment that frequently will create a situation where we're going to administer the drug test. Because behavior by the individual suggests that they're not in a condition to be able to participate appropriately in the visit. And on occasions, getting a positive, depending upon conduct, behavior, and how the individual is conducting themselves, you know, also is something that is taken into consideration. So a positive on a scheduled drug test for someone who has a scheduled visit with their child will not always result in the visit being canceled. So that's, you know, part of what we take into consideration.
And because the panel has 10 different things that we're looking at. You also have to remember, sometimes this conversation with me as a parent is like, well, it's stirring up positive for this, whatever. Oh, yeah, I took that 5 days ago. Depends on how long different drugs react to different people and how long it's in their body for that. One of the other things that when I went online to this company was they were saying, because of that time frame, sometimes a false, we see it as a positive because maybe it's a faint line or it's a little lighter. By the time they get it, it's because it'll be a negative by the time they get it because it has worn off or through that system. We went with this company, our unit leaders into protective services and foster care and preventive services sit on family treatment court with Judge Foma has every week, and it is for parents that have known substance use disorders. It's part of their family court orders to participate in order to either have their children returned or to keep their children. So they all went to a conference about 3 years ago when I started, and they came back with different information about different drug tests. At that time, we were only using a 5-panel urine screen, so we looked at the different ones along with Judge Savona. They have their own drug screening that they do at Family Treatment Court, but we went with this program or this company because of the number of choices that we have to do it, how we could change it if we want to. It is one of the more expensive ones, but that doesn't always mean anything. And the fact that they say their false positive rate was less than 10% was pretty much one of those things that we were looking at.
So it was an industry standard, and we wanted to have consistency across the board. And we felt that using the same kit that the Family Treatment Court was using would create consistency, you know, based on the number of substances it was testing for. And the rate, after last month, we embarked on gathering data, and over the last 10 months, we had administered 284 tests, and that's where we came up with today's data, that out of those 284 tests, 19 of the 284 were false positive. So that's 6.7%, which is better than the industry standard. So the test kits that we currently use appear, you know, to be appropriate and of a good high quality standard. But obviously we could entertain exploring
because of the pattern of this K2 coming up.
Yeah.
Recently. That's one of the things the supervisors are looking at. What else is out there? What other things are there? And they are urine screens. We don't do mouth swabs or anything like that.
How do you know a positive is a false positive?
We get a report back.
We overnight it to the lab?
Yeah.
Okay, so the lab is you're doing a test in mouse, which is giving you a positive, and then you send to the lab and it comes back. It's not really.
Oh, so every positive is tested twice.
Yeah, it's sensitive.
Yeah, every positive is tested twice. So if you have a positive screen and you have a prescription for something that comes up, then that's positive. We don't argue it.
Right.
We don't do anything. There's, you know, no negative info
on right.
that piece of it. If I come in and I do my urine screening and I show that I'm positive for heroin, and I admit that I guess I used it 3 days ago, I appear to be appropriate. I'm not yelling. I'm not screaming. I'm walking. I'm talking. I'm going to still have my visit, or I'm going to still have whatever we have for that. The only ones that we send out are when the parent says, I didn't use any of those drugs, or you have that wrong. I don't have prescriptions for this. So then we'll send that out. And so, like I said, we sent out 157 tests together, all together, which is more than half. 138 were confirmed to be positive, and then the 19 were confirmed to be negative for the drugs that we were asking for them to double check.
Does anyone else have?
Yeah, go ahead. Both questions. So, first easy question is, how much does each test cost?
That is an easy question, but I don't have that.
Okay,
for that.
And then my next question is. So you're saying that a visit wouldn't be canceled because you've tested.
You tested positive. Your visit most likely will not be canceled if you are able to be engaging. And I don't want to put these children at rest.
Sure.
You don't want a piece of that. So we will have a lot of visits still take place. We will have to make notes for it. Just like if you refuse the drug test, it gets marked down as a negative. Just an automatic, that's part of family court.
Right.
We go back to court when we report back.
Correct. So the test comes back positive and the visit goes ahead, and then what happens?
So when then we overnight out. If there's a discrepancy, we overnight it out. We find out. If it's a false positive, then we'll go back to the parent and we try and figure out why it came up. Or we tell them we were wrong, you know, false positive. If it was a positive, we go back to them and we talk them out. Are they engaged? If they're not engaged, we try and get them engaged. It may be that we have to file late. That doesn't mean their visit stopped or the service was stopped. It just means we have to go back to court in front of the court judges and say, this is what happened on these dates. They tested positive. It's a violation of the court order, because the majority of the court orders say, absolutely, you cannot be using substances.
And family court arrives at entering an order that authorizes us to administer the drug test. So the individual who's the subject of the court order, that also would include supervised visitation, knows and has the expectation that in order to be in compliance with the court order, they should not be using, and that in the event that they arrive for a scheduled visit, and there's some reason to be concerned about the fact that they might have used by virtue of their behavior or because it's a scheduled test, you know, we will administer the test. But again, if each and every case is based on its own circumstances. If it's a positive and they arrive at disclosing that they used several days before, but they're still presenting appropriately in a way that they'll be able to have a productive visit, and there's no concerns or obvious impairment, and all our visits are supervised. So if something were to begin to happen during the course of a visit, so the positive test result does not always result in the visit not going forward as scheduled. And, you know, the purpose of it is not to be punitive. The purpose of it is to inform the process so that these are individuals that, you know, may have occasions where, notwithstanding the treatment that they're participating in, they may have had a moment where they ended up using again. We're not trying to create a scenario where anybody is getting punished or being deprived of continuing to have the relationship with their child, because that's our goal, reunification and successful outcomes through treatment. So, you know, and we're always, you know, I know Legislator McCullough brought this up. You know, if there's any conversations you're having with your constituents who experience an outcome based on a positive test result, you know, we'll take another look at that. How did we respond to it? What was the consequence of it? Did it go to the lab and come back that it was a false positive? Did we figure out that there might have been a prescription that the individual was involved in taking that meant to that result? So, you know, the purpose of the underlying resolution, it goes beyond that for us, that if there's occasion you're hearing about outcomes that, you know, we can revisit because there's been issues or consequences. But, you know, just understanding the overall process and how, you know, we arrive at the decisions. And sometimes it can be very helpful, you know, in terms of ongoing treatment and being in compliance with court orders.
I would just be curious to know if that squares for the sponsor.
I'm just trying to protect people. Because people can come to me, and a lot of people are afraid of drug tests and what could happen to them.
Are there other scenarios where people that the Department of Social Services is administering drug tests and there's a consequence to a person as a result of testing positive, you know, because we essentially do it in the context of these court orders that involve visitation with children. So I'm just wondering, you know, we're not administering tests and then depriving those individuals benefits, or I just don't know. You're indicating that they're afraid that in order to participate in something, they're going to have to be involved in a drug test, and if it comes out positive, there's a consequence. I mean, we're open to discussion on where and how is that happening and to who, and how can we be responsive to it.
Even my experience in the last 4 years, even if we're doing a drug test for based on allegations, we get a CPS report, we want you to come in, we want you to do a drug test, doesn't mean that we're removing those children. Most of the time, because we want to keep them with their families, it's doing safety plans with them. It may be that I test positive and I want my brother Mike to do it, but Mike might have a history as well. So CPS is going to have Mike come in to test before I allow my baby to go to Mike for the weekend while we're trying to figure out what's going on. So there's always conversations with our clients when those tests come back. Conversations sometimes go the wrong way because it's emotional, it's personal, and they get hyped up, they get angry, they start to yell and scream. We had one situation where the sheriff's department did have to remove them from the property because they weren't willing to sit with us to figure out where they're saying, I didn't do any of this, and we're saying, but it's a pretty strong positive, you know, but.
And we understand, I mean, the circumstances around agreeing to be tested, it can be stressful. It can feel invasive, and how, you know, individuals in the community are experiencing that, it's important for us to know about it. But our goal also is the safety and well-being of children and keeping families intact. So, you know, but utilizing drug tests is a tool that we, you know, have to implement, you know, to be able to gather information to inform decisions about what will happen, where children will ultimately be able to be arrived at potentially being placed under circumstances where it's come to our attention that their safety and well-being may be at risk. So we're definitely very aware of that. It's not necessarily a casual experience that, you know, doesn't create a lot of stress. So we're always trying to do everything we can, you know, in a trauma-informed way to make sure that, you know, we have explained why this is necessary to do and how we're going to evaluate the outcomes. But a lot of times we're dealing with multiple individuals and family members who also want to be available to help. But once they might have to participate in a drug test, you know, maybe their personal circumstances don't put them in a position where they have a comfort level with that. So we want to keep people safe, and we want to definitely ensure that the children are safe, and we want to be respectful. You know, it's not an easy ask in every situation, but if you ever have any circumstances that you want to relate to us where people feel there's been a consequence, you know, but we feel that we have a high-quality test that we've been utilizing, and we feel like our protocols around interpreting those test results try to take all of these dynamics into consideration.
And this has brought back to my unit leaders, and in addition to the initial training that they get to read it, not every caseworker reads it. We only have certain ones that have taken the training and are certified to do the reading. We do annual in-service as well for it, but we're talking about now just bringing everybody back in again and to relook at, talk about the K2, talk about what other panels we might want to adjust the panel for, and really talk about those thin lines and what you see, and maybe have a second person take a look at it before we say that it is a positive, especially on those thin ones. Sometimes when the reading comes out and it's a bold color, I'm not going to have my caseworker go and say it couldn't be a false positive, because those typical bold lines do not come back as a negative. It's the faint ones.
I'm happy with that.
Okay, so you're happy with the current, yeah, with what they're doing today? Okay, so how does that change? What are your feelings about this legislation memo?
It sounds like you're doing everything, yeah, that I'm asking.
You don't have to decide right now what to do. We could just leave it. Right now, we have a motion on the table to amend it. We could also just, we don't have to act on that motion. We also don't have to do anything with this right now. You could decide what to do
in between the meetings.
Do we postpone it?
We can postpone it. We can take no action. Do you want us to postpone it?
Okay.
So why don't we do this? So you can withdraw your motion. Okay, and then you can make a motion to postpone.
I make a motion to postpone.
Okay. I second that. And so motion by Legislator McCullough, second by Legislator Harmon. All those in favor of a postponement?
None.
Any opposed?
Okay.
Great. And then I've lost my agenda. Where am I?
That's our last resolution.
That's our last resolution. That's our last resolution. There's no new business, there's no old business. Do I have a motion to adjourn? Moved by Legislator Harmon, seconded by Legislator, I'll give it to Legislator Corcoran. Okay. All those in favor?
Come on.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, we're adjourned.